Hello, and welcome to this webcast on the Conceptual Framework. Today's topic is derecognition. My name is Daniela Maciniak, and I'm joined today by Manuel Capsis. Both of us work on the Conceptual Framework project. Before we start, as always, a couple of housekeeping points. You can download the slide pack by clicking on the Event Resources button on the left-hand side of your screen. Also, this webcast is not live. It is a recording, so we cannot take questions today. And last but not least, the views that will be expressed are our own and not necessarily those of the ISB or the IFRS Foundation.
So, as you can see on this slide, we are progressing with our webcast series. This webcast is the sixth in the series of webcasts that we have recorded on our proposed changes to the Conceptual Framework for Financial Reporting. Previous webcasts on, for example, measurements or the definition and recognition of elements are already available on our website. The remaining webcasts will go live week by week, and we will round up the series with a webcast on the implications of the conceptual framework proposals for existing standards. Today, we will be talking about the proposals on derecognition. Now, Daniela, this topic is completely new to the conceptual framework, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah. The current conceptual framework doesn't say anything about derecognition, so the exposure draft proposes to fill that gap by describing what derecognition is and proposing guidance on when an asset or liability should be derecognized. The exposure draft states that derecognition is the removal of all or part of a previously recognized asset or liability from an entity's statement of financial position. So, when an entity loses control of all or part of an asset, the entity would need to derecognize that asset or part of it. The same goes for liabilities. If the entity has no longer a present obligation for recognized liability, it would remove it from its balance sheet. So, when derecognizing an asset or liability, we are trying to achieve two aims. And here, the derecognition section links back to one of the qualitative characteristics of financial reporting, faithful representation. One aim that needs to be achieved is the faithful representation of the assets and liabilities that were retained after the event or transaction that triggered the derecognition. In addition to that, the entity must also represent faithfully the change in its assets and liabilities. Normally, those two aims are achieved by doing a couple of things. Firstly, any assets and liabilities that have been transferred, consumed, or similar are derecognized, and any new assets or liabilities are recognized. That also includes any assets or liabilities that have been acquired, that were incurred, or have been created as part of the transaction or event. Any income or expense from this process would be recognized. The second thing an entity does is to continue recognizing the retained assets and liabilities, only if there are any, of course. If that is the case, those retained components of, for example, an asset would become a separate unit of account. For this retained component, the entity wouldn't recognize any income or expense.
So if I understand correctly, derecognition simply mirrors recognition. That is, I derecognize something if it no longer meets the definition of an asset or liability, or the recognition criteria no longer met. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct in most cases.
Sounds quite simple then.
Well, yes, it normally is. Let's look how this theory works in practice. As I said, derecognition is normally quite simple and straightforward. Let's take a simple sale as an example. An entity sells a machine to another party. The carrying amount of that machine in the balance sheet is 800 currency units, but the entity manages to sell the machine for 850 currency units. Faithfully representing the assets retained and the change in the entity's assets as a result of the transaction is quite straightforward in this case. The entity derecognizes the machine as it has lost the control over it by selling it. The amount shown for the machine after the transaction is nil. At the same time, it recognizes 850 currency units as cash, the proceeds from the machine. So the entity makes a gain of 50 currency units. By derecognizing the machine, recognizing the cash, and recognizing a gain, we have faithfully represented the assets retained after the transaction, which means the cash. And we have also faithfully represented the change in the entity's assets, meaning the exchange of the machine for cash, with the resulting gain as a result of the transaction. That looks quite simple and straightforward, and I think in most cases, derecognition really is that straightforward.
You have just said in most cases. Are there cases where it is not that simple and straightforward?
Yes, certainly. There can be cases where the two aims, that is, depicting the assets and liabilities retained and depicting the change in the assets and liabilities, conflict, and where it is not that simple, as in this example. Let's have a look at a sale and repurchase agreement, for example. We have a bond with a carrying amount of 800 currency units and a fair value of 850 currency units. That bond is sold, and at the same time, it is agreed to repurchase it 1 month later for 852 currency units. We assume that the fair value will still be at 850 currency units at this time, and it will be the same counterparty and the same bond that we are repurchasing. The first question that needs to be asked in this example is whether the purchaser is holding the bond as an agent for the seller. If the purchaser is only acting as an agent for the seller, then the seller never loses control of the bond and it would not be derecognized. However, if that is not the case, then we need to think about how to depict the transaction. If we decided to derecognize the bond at the time of the sale, then we can faithfully represent the assets and liabilities retained after the transaction. This is shown on the slide. The entity would derecognize the bond. At the same time, it recognizes 850 currency units as cash, the amount it received for it, and shows a gain of 50 currency units.
But Daniela, does this really faithfully represent the change in the entity's assets and liabilities?
Well, we know that the entity has committed to repurchase the bond in 1 month's time. When the entity repurchases the bond 1 month later for 852 currency units, it re-recognizes the bond at 850 currency units and reports a cash outflow of the 852 currency units, leaving a cash position at minus two. In addition, the entity would also record a loss of two currency units on a repurchase contract. So basically, the entity's financial statements do not look too different from what we saw before the transaction. If the sale and repurchase agreement are looked at together, it doesn't look like there has been a significant change in the entity's assets and liabilities. The entity starts and ends with the same bond. However, it has received 850 currency units in cash and then paid out 852 currency units in cash. This change appears more like a financing transaction.
So does the exposure draft propose what to do in these circumstances?
Yes, it does. So if the aim is to depict the assets and liabilities retained, conflicts with the aim to depict the change in the entity's assets and liabilities, as we've just seen in the sale and repurchase example, the exposure draft suggests considering a couple of things. Firstly, as mentioned before, we need to ask the question whether the transferee, which means the purchaser, is acting as an agent for the transferor, the seller. If this is the case, then the seller never loses control of the bond and it would not be derecognized. Thinking about which party has the risk and rewards of ownership of the bond might help determine whether the purchaser is acting as an agent for the seller. Assuming the transferee is not acting as an agent for the transferor, then in most cases, you would derecognize, but consider giving additional information to depict the transaction clearly. One thing to consider would be separate presentation. That could mean presenting this transaction as, for example, a single or separate line item. The exposure draft also suggests considering giving some explanatory disclosure, which could mean, and I stick to the sale and repurchase example, giving more information about the repurchase agreement, basically all the information that helps users to understand better the effect of the transaction. And if those two things still do not give enough detail to understand the nature of the transaction, you could also think about continued recognition. But even if you made the decision to continue recognizing an asset or liability, separate presentation and explanatory disclosure may still be needed. Let's come back to the previous example. As I just said, in some situations, continued recognition might better depict the transaction. So if we decided not to derecognize the bond when it is sold, our numbers would change a bit. In effect, the sale and derecognition is treated as a secured borrowing of 850 currency units. Instead of derecognizing the bond, we would actually record a loan of 850 currency units. That shows the entity's obligation to repurchase the bond in 1 month's time. So, after the sale of the bond, we would still show the bond at 800 currency units, 850 currency units cash that we have received, and the loan measured at 850 currency units. No gain would be recorded, which is a big difference to the previous case, when we recorded the gain of 50 currency units. Our numbers for the repurchase would also change a bit. When we repurchase the bond, no change in the bond itself is recorded as it has not been derecognized. It will be shown after the transaction at 800 currency units. The cash that we will have spent for repurchasing the bond is shown as before as a change of 852 currency units, leaving our cash balance after repurchase at minus 2. Since we repurchased the bond, we would record a change in the loan of 850 currency units, showing that we fulfilled the obligation to repurchase that bond. The loan would be reported at nil after the transaction. In addition, the entity would also record an interest expense of 2 currency units. This is an accrued interest expense rather than an expense incurred because of the transaction itself. So, this is what the exposure draft proposes on derecognition. We would like to hear from you if you find our proposals useful, if you think we could improve them. The period for commenting on the exposure draft ends on the 26th of October. However, the board will discuss in its September meeting a possible extension of 30 days. And if the board decided to extend the comment period, you would have until the 25th of November to comment on our proposals. And with that, I would like to conclude this webcast. I hope you found it useful. As I said in the beginning, there will be more webcasts in a couple of weeks, and I hope you will listen into those ones as well. The reporting entity will be the topic for next week's webcast. But if you can't wait until then, we have a couple of links where you can find further information about the project, for example, the exposure draft itself, or you can sign up for email alerts. So thank you very much for listening and goodbye.